Today on Wings, Diana Wanyonyi interviews Agnes Lena, an indigenous climate activist from the Herding region of Kenya, who acts both locally and globally.
There's nothing that comes to you in a silver platter here.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
My name is Agnes Lena. I'm originally from Samburu County, from a place called Baragoi. And then I got married. Now my home is in Kajiado because that's where my husband comes from. And then I started an organization called Ilara Matak Community Concerns. That means caregivers or caretakers, pastoralists, people who actually depend on livestock for their livelihoods, people who take care of cows and goats. But, you know, it also denotes caregiving for even for human beings and even for nature. So we are caregivers. That's what I always say, that our organization is like an organization of that takes care, that gives care to not just our livestock, but also to human beings and to our environment, to nature. So my passion on environmental issues and climate change, it's always been that climate change is affecting all of us, but it affects women in a more unique and special way. Women spend, according to even statistics, women spend 2 million hours fetching water. And pastoralist women are the ones who are most affected by that issue about water. When I was younger, when I was in primary school, I spent 20 minutes, because there was a small stream next to my mother's house, 20 minutes to and fro to go and fetch water. And then sometimes maybe half an hour because, you know, kids go and play.
Yes.
And then with time, just walking. Then with time, that small stream, because of climate change issues and all that, the water went deeper and deeper. So during the season when the water goes deeper, we walk for 1 hour, another 1 hour, which means 2 hours to and fro, to fetch water in another river. It's called actually River Baragoi. Then with time also again, because of climate change, that goes even deeper and the water goes, you know, you just used to scoop the sand and you get the water. But now you have to scoop even deeper and deeper. And sometimes you just get nothing. So we go to another place, which is now 2 hours one way and 2 hours another way, which is 4 hours both ways. So, and then do you know how much water you're going to fetch? You're only going to fetch 20 liters of water. So that's 4 hours, 20 liters of water. It's not enough because you'll use that water for cooking food, washing utensils, washing uniform because I was in primary school, washing myself, you know, a body for all of us because there were three of us. And of course, for home use, it's not enough. So that wastes a lot of, as a child, a student in the primary school, it meant the next day I'm not going to school. Why? Because I'm so tired, having worked for 4 hours. It means we'll not have enough water to wash my uniform. I will be beaten if the uniform is dirty. So I have to remain behind and do that. Thirdly, I will not go because I've not done my homework. So that means missing class. So how many girls miss class because of that? And the situation has not changed much. It's still the same. Most pastoralists fetch their water from streams, downstreams, everywhere you go. We don't have running water. My mother passed away, may the Lord rest her soul in peace, 3 years ago. And even by the time she passed on, she did not have running tap water. And the first thing I had told my mother, when I grow up, I will buy for you a tank. And I did it so that my mother doesn't have to struggle with water in her old age. So it means you'll just get surface run of water. So now what's happening is that we're struggling to find our parents the plastic tanks, the big plastic tanks, to get surface run of water. You can also get that only if you have an iron sheet roof. Because if you do not have that, you cannot also collect the water. So that's just an example of how women are affected by climate change. Women have no time to do anything else. They have no productive hours to do anything else like business, fend for their children, even take care of themselves. Because they have to spend so much money, so many hours going to fetch water. And then after that, you still haven't fetched firewood. You still haven't cooked the food. You still haven't washed the utensils. You still haven't washed the uniforms for your children and for the clothes for your family. So all that, if you look at it, it really takes a toll on women, especially women in Africa. I do not know about women from other parts of the world, and especially pastoralist women. So those are the issues that made me think I need to work around issues of climate change for women, for pastoralist women, so that I see what we can do in order to lessen the hours of working for water, lessen the hours of working for firewood, and just have some hours for the woman to fend for herself and to have an alternative livelihood. So then, my husband and I came up with an idea of an alternative livelihood, and we have a resource center. How that came about is that we got friends from Houston, from Houston Northwest Church, World Hope Ministries. And they just asked, Agnes, what would you like us to do for you and for the women and girls in your community? And I said, buy for us machines, sewing machines. So just like that, they bought for us 10 of them. So, and I said, I cannot take them to my house. The community gave us 1 acre of land. Okay, the land is here. What do? We must build a place where we can put these sewing machines. My husband and I sold 10 cows. It's not easy for a massive man, a pastoralist man, to sell cows. But he did to support the cause. He sold 30 cows. And we made the resource center. We actually made it a very big deal. And we called the media, and we called friends from the county and outside to come and witness when we launched the project. So in this resource center, women come and sew uniforms. They make mats. It's very interesting. And I just love to see a pastoralist woman making mats. It's not easy. Usually they would just be sitting to do beads, but this is mats. Then they make bags. In fact, recently when we had when we launched our policy on FGM, we were given a tender to do 50 of those bags. So what else would you call that? You would call it alternative livelihood. And what else would you call it? You'd call it activities that are non-climate dependent. So at least when they are not looking after that one goat or that one cow for the whole day, they'll have something else that they will be doing. And they have a place where they will do it. Yes.
Wow. That's very inspiring. Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Now, what is the role of these women in matters of combating climate change?
Well, climate change jargon is so scientific. We don't use all those scientific jargons. We have a calendar to say what it is that you can do. We have our own seasons and we know them by name. And that's the only way to explain what climate change means.
But please, just elaborate on that calendar.
Yes. Yeah, so
how it works.
In this calendar, we know that from this month to the months are also in Maasai name, in Maasai words. From this month to this month, we know we have long rains. And then from November again and December, we know we have short rains. So we know the time the boys will be circumcised, because then we know that's the time they will be able to rest. Then they will be trained about their culture. Mm-hmm. Usually it takes a whole year, but things are changing because of school. So now all that has reduced. Mm-hmm. And then looking also at that calendar again, we choose to change because now things are no longer the way they used to be. So that's how we explain what climate change means. Okay. And then we have films. We bring women, the whole community even sometimes, to the hall and show them a film.
Broadcasting in which language?
In Swahili, but we translate. In fact, we say prior what it's all about. And most people these days know Swahili. There are few who don't know. And then I can just give an example. We show a film of Mother Martha Wangari. Wangari Madai. and her tree planting exercise and initiative. Because when you explain about tree planting, they don't understand. These are pastoralist people. So planting things is not part of us. In fact, plucking them is one. Because we don't understand. We use rangeland for pastoralism and for livestock. So planting things is not in our culture, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But now we have to do it. So we show this film, for instance, and then we tell them, so what did you see? Oh, we saw a woman planting trees and all that, and then see the harshness she went through and the beating and all that, and it makes them sad, what it makes them feel and what it makes them do. Want to do. And at the end of the day, they said, it makes us want to plant trees. So we go and bring the trees. And we deliberately bring trees that they know. For instance, the fig tree is called Olngaboli. We bring that kind of tree and tell them this is the tree to plant. Then we plant. We bring acacia trees because they are familiar to that and they know it. We bring fruit trees. Because at least these ones will be eaten. This is part of the food. And that's now what pastoralist women are doing. And we also have a community farm where we plant food. That is alternative livelihoods for us. Okay. And it's an adaptation measure. And even the things I was telling you about the mats and the beadwork and all that, those are all nothing but adaptation and resilience projects for our women.
On Wings, you're hearing Agnes Lena, an indigenous climate activist from the Herding region of Kenya, talking with Diana Wanyonyi.
You spoke about something interesting about how you can detect the effect of climate through intestines of a goat. Can you just take me through this indigenous prediction and method?
Especially in Samburu County, where I come from, we grew up knowing that the weatherman is the astrologer. He is the one who looks at the stars and tells us when it rains. And the issue about stars is a shared knowledge among almost all pastoralist communities. Last December, my father-in-law told my husband, it's going to rain. We were almost despairing. And my husband asked, why? He said, I've seen the star. This evening when you come out, come, I show you the star. Indeed, the star was being talked about in the entire Kajiado County.
It was there?
Yes. And indeed, it rained.
How unique is that star from other stars?
Well, it's the size of it and the name. They even have a name for it.
Is it bigger?
It's bigger. It's bigger and it's brighter.
What is the name?
Well, I don't know the name. Okay. I have to ask, but it has a name.
Does it appear yearly?
No. It just comes when you're anticipating rain, you see it, and the elders know. So we are busy in towns and doing our own things, but those things are there. The stars are there. So what we want to do is...
And it rained?
Absolutely. It didn't even go one day. It didn't even pass one day. It just rained. As soon as he said it will rain. And it rained. Even when I was growing up, the astrologer, his name is Lesepen, he would come and tell us about the two stars. Mm-hmm. One of them is the father and then the son. Mm-hmm. And if the father is on top, he will not urinate to the son. Definitely, you cannot imagine your father urinating on you.
True.
So definitely that means dryness. There's no rain. But if the smaller star is on top and the bigger star is is below, definitely. The child.
It will rain.
Yes, that's the child and the father. It will rain. And that's traditional knowledge. Yeah.
Because these old people are not learned by then. No. And they could still predict such.
To date. Not just then, to date. We still listen to them more than the weatherman. We complement the tradition and the science. So take the traditional man to the meteorological department and bring the weatherman also and let them talk about their different sciences and then just compare notes. Yeah. The two have to be complemented and they have to be used.
Yeah.
And Kenya is a rich country, rich with cultures, rich with traditions, and we should embrace each other. Mm-hmm. That's what I can say.
Can you also tell us about goat intestines?
Yeah, yeah. The goat intestines also predict so many things, not just rain, but also wars, sickness, well-being, rivers flooding, all those. So you slaughter a goat, and then the intestines, you know, the veins. The veins just show. The veins are actually like tributaries of the river. The darker they are, the more they predict water, rivers flowing. Then the thinner they are and a bit frail and without the rich color, then it's frail. It's not going to rain.
And you know how to read this?
I know how to do it myself. I know how to read it myself. I've been taught. I saw it from since I was a child, so now I know. Even if sometimes when we slaughter a goat with my husband at home, we just do it for the sake of doing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we let other people see what we are doing. Yeah.
Interesting. Now, pastoralists are the people who move from one place to another.
Yes.
Now, for this initiative for women in Kajiado, in Samburu, how do you make sure that they don't move from where they are to a different place, given that there's communal land and they've also planted these fruit trees and other trees? How do you help them not to move from one place to another?
In Kajiado these days, people have settled more and more. They still practice nomadic pastoralism, but it's the men who move. Women will stay with the children and older people. And a few cows will also be left behind. Right now, as I talk to you, my own cows are not at home because of nomadism, because recently there was no rain until it rained recently. We had moved, but we left 10 of them behind for milk. So that's how it is. Even where we have our resource center, it's more permanent now. Mm-hmm. People have settled. And in Kajiado, land has been subdivided, so people have their own homes now. So there's no movement as such. Mm-hmm. So it's easy now to tell people plant trees and they can plant it. Mm-hmm. Then the problem is if you don't fence off your home, you know, we live with our animals, we live with our goats, we live with our cows. So definitely they will interfere. And then also definitely, you know, pastoralist areas, rain is not a common thing. So still it's a problem. If you have no water, those trees may not even grow. But during a rainy season like now, it's possible to plant trees and they'll reach a certain level. Mm-hmm. And in the small farm that I told you about, women had planted trees and they've grown. Mm-hmm. We planted some also in the school, but they all died because there was no one to water them. And then plus the fence of our little school there is not good. And so the goats just finished mm-hmm. all our trees.
Speaking about water, now for these women who are now in Samburu and Kajiado, how have you helped them now to get water apart from resource center? How much are we talking about? How much did you spend in the initiative? And is the Kenyan government doing much to help women?
No, I have never reached out to anyone, to be honest with you. Mm. I have done my own things my own way mm-hmm. with my staff and with my community. We did our little thing just on our own. Mm. I don't even think I've heard about that initiative by the vice president. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in this country, some things are done if you are not aware. Mm-hmm. And even if you are aware, you have to know someone to be able to get that help. Mm-hmm. And then this government cannot help everybody. Some of us just have to take our own initiatives and do the bit that we can do and then wait for money to find us somewhere. Let money find you going. That's my motto. Mm-hmm. Let me do the little that I can do and let money follow. Mm-hmm. We cannot keep waiting.
Okay. Yeah. For these women, how are they getting water now?
These days we have a lot of initiatives. We have goodwill from some people. Like in Baragoi, we have a priest. We were in school with him, and now he's come back to give back to the community. And some vulnerable women have benefited from 10,000 liter tanks. That's the only way to do it. And then building just a small house where you can be able to put gutters and get rain water from the roof catchment. And then for in Kajiado, what I've seen most people do is that most people have a shallow well. Is it called a shallow well? A dam, sort of. And just a small dam where they can have their water. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a dam, your neighbor could have a dam. And that's now purely surface run of water. I also have surface run of water. Believe it or not, I don't have tap water in my house. I don't. I also have rain catchment and dam water, just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. So when it's totally dry, they can come to me if I have. And if it's, we've never really had a time when we completely had to go and buy water, no. Mm. Somehow we have it in. And then in our resource center also, we wrote a proposal to another organization called Good Hands, and they did a borehole for us. And then the late Ngaiseri, we did a proposal, and we have a borehole. It's 3 cubic meters. Mm-hmm. It is not a lot. Mm-hmm. Just enough for the irrigation of the little garden that we have. But also, during drought, we open it to the community.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
To not all of them, because otherwise it just gets dried. Mm-hmm. But I want to say we have plans.
Yeah.
We have plans. We are with my friends from Houston Church. They said they will help us with water. We're still discussing that. And by March next year, we shall have a solution for that.
Agnes Lena is the executive director and founder of Ilaramata Community Concerns and a pastoralist from Baragoi, Samburu County in northern Kenya. She works internationally with other indigenous communities and was a delegate to several United Nations conferences on climate change. There she worked with Mary Robinson, a former president of Ireland and former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, whose Climate Justice Foundation supported women's leadership and getting gender into UN climate documents. The foundation closed its doors in 2019. Diana Wanyonyi interviewed Agnes Lena for Wings.
You also spoke about COP.
It was COP19.
COP19. What took you there and what are you presenting, Oma?
First of all, I must tell you that I belong to a network in Africa called Indigenous People of Africa Coordinating Committee. It's called IPAC. And in IPAC, I was elected as the gender coordinator. So I went there as IPAC gender coordinator to follow issues on gender. But when I went there, you just can't go real in the, and then say, poop, where is the gender and all that? No, you have to learn from the beginning to the end, from COP 1 to 19, what happened. And then for you to be able now to know where are the issues of gender, where have they reached? This is when I knew about Mary Robinson. She was the human rights representative at the UNHCR. And it's not easy. It was crazy. I just felt like, oh my God, I need to go back home. By the end of the day, my head is throbbing because it was running from one corner to the other and another and another and learning. What helped me is the Echo magazine that we were talking about today. You're given every morning. I never used to ignore because it really brought me to speed. And I also had an indigenous brother who was there. His name is Kimarin. He's really grown in this world until he's now, you know, he's I think, the African representative in GEF that we were talking about, Green Environmental Facility. He's really grown.
Mm-hmm.
And he helped me to come to speed. Mm-hmm. And he too was learning. I learned about it. And after that, I continued coming to all the COPs except this year.
Mm-hmm.
This year, Mary Robinson, the one who used to take me, her foundation, closed down. And now she works with the elders. It's another movement, the elders, that was started by Nelson Mandela. And then IPAC, my organization, also did not have money to take everybody. So we just took a few people, and I gave up my position.
For indigenous, what were some of the aspects that you are fighting for to be included in the COP?
Well, we were going as a movement of indigenous people, not as Kenyans. Okay. Indigenous are traditional people, people who value and who follow their tradition, their cultures. And you know very well that pastoralist communities, not just the Maasai, Samburu, Turkana, are known for sticking by their cultures. And even Article 100, Article 55, in Kenya, in the Constitution, we are recognized as such. People who want to be recognized as people who stick to their culture. We are recognized as marginalized. We are recognized as pastoralists. We are recognized as minorities. 5 times we've been recognized in that constitution. So even the Kenyans who go from here, a group of us, we go as indigenous communities. And we are the ones who fought for indigenous knowledge to be included in the text in COP21, in the Paris Agreement, Article number 7. And now it's there. Wow. It's because of our effort. And we are happy with that. Because even if not just Kenyans, there are so many other communities, indigenous communities, like in South America, they're very strong. The movement there is much, much stronger than Africa. Because in Africa, there's this argument that everybody is indigenous, which is fine. If you feel that you're indigenous, come and join the movement. It's there. It's open for all. And then for South America, the situation is even worse than Kenya and other places in Africa. So for them, they even have to put up a bigger fight than we do. I don't think we have to fight so much to be indigenous in Kenya.
And what was the aim now of taking that initiative there? Apart from indigenous people to be recognized, what other aim for in terms of gender?
Well, you know very well that gender is a big issue worldwide, but we feel that gender equality or gender equity among pastoralist communities, women are already marginalized worldwide, say so to speak.
True.
But among pastoralist communities, it's triple or double marginalization because of, again, our culture. So we fight every now and then. There's nothing that comes to you in a silver platter here. You just have to voice yourself. You say, you have to talk. You have to shout for you to be included, like we did in Paris through Mary Robinson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and eventually we got that text. And that text has everything, including human rights, and it also has inclusion of women, which is gender, and then it has inclusion of minorities and vulnerable communities and indigenous knowledge. Right. All of them, yeah. Just read it. It's a very rich chapter.
Okay.
And the Paris Agreement is a very simple document. You can read it in a day and put everything in your mind.
That was Agnes Lena, an indigenous climate activist from the Herding region of Kenya, interviewed for Wings by Diana Wanyonyi. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our page at wings.org. Wings thanks all our friendly supporters, including Genevieve Vaughn, Suzette Cullen, and your local community radio station. Wings makes programs available to stations free of charge. Inquire by email, wings@wings.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
You are listening to